This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi has accused that country's government and members of its allied Youth League of gross violations of human rights, which it says in some cases might constitute crimes against humanity.
And that is Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up.
Also, the FAO warns Southern Africa to prepare for a drought. Officials worry that an Ebola outbreak in the eastern DRC could be spreading. And Zimbabwe's newly elected lawmakers take their oaths of office this morning.
We'll have these stories and more for you just ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization has warned Southern African officials meeting in Zimbabwe to better prepare for expected drought or risk food security problems. Columbus Mafhunga reports from Harare.
About an hour's drive south of Harare, 62-year-old maize farmer Leo Yuma is tending his land. With the rainy season expected in just weeks, Yuma, with no irrigation facilities for his maize field, he says he cannot sit still as drought is expected. He says all his children are unemployed, so they all depend on farming for survival. I do not irrigate. I depend on the rains, he says. I can't dictate to God what to do. I will depend on his rains for my maize, says Yuma. Back in Harare, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, is warning Southern African officials that investment, not prayer, is needed to prepare for drought. At a three-day meeting on ending hunger, the FAO warned Southern African nations must take measures to deal with drought conditions or risk food security. Patrick Komawa is coordinator for the FAO in Southern Africa.
Drought is with us. I mean, this is one peculiar issue that countries have to take into consideration. You do not wait for the prediction before you put in measures to mitigate drought. This sub-region, only 7% of the land, arable land, is irrigated, which is about 34 million hectares. That is not acceptable. Investment in irrigation is very, very important. Investment in climate-resilient agriculture is very important.
Komawa says there is about 40% chance the region will be hit again this year by the El Nino weather pattern with the high temperatures and low rainfall. The last El Nino-induced drought from 2014 to 2016 led to 40 million people requiring food assistance across Southern Africa. Madagascar and Zimbabwe were among some of the worst hit countries. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Officials worry that an Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo could be spreading despite early detection and a concerted effort to contain it. The Congolese Health Ministry said yesterday the five-week-old outbreak has killed 85 people, with another 124 cases of the disease reported, including 93 of which were confirmed. Most worrying are reports of two probable cases in Butembo, roughly 60 kilometers from the outbreak's epicenters in Mbalaka and Beni, with one of them dying. That's significant because Butembo is a major trading center not far from the Uganda border that is home to more than a million people. Also, in four of the 13 most recent cases, officials say they don't know the cause of transmission. This despite concerted efforts to track everyone who came into contact with people who have contracted the deadly disease. The DRC DRC Health Ministry says health workers are now running into resistance to help from some families who have been hiding sick people and refusing to be vaccinated. UNICEF says education efforts in four languages on how to reduce the risk of catching Ebola have reached 2.5 million in the area's 11 million people. Health workers are using a vaccine that proved effective in preventing transmission of the virus in an outbreak in another part of the country earlier this year. And the first treatment drugs are being used for those already infected, with at least two declared to have recovered. The effort also is complicated because the area of the outbreak is a conflict zone, with about 100 armed groups.
The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi has accused that country's government and members of its allied Youth League of gross violations of human rights, which it says in some cases might constitute crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the commission's latest findings.
In its new 250-page report, the Commission of Inquiry on Burundi documents summary executions, arbitrary arrests, forced disappearances, acts of torture, and sexual violence, among other forms of abuse. Commission member Françoise Hampson says it is hard to get accurate figures on the extent of violations being committed because efforts often are taken to make crimes less visible. For instance, she says the bodies of people killed in summary executions are often disposed of at night and are difficult to find.
We know that the form of executions has changed, so they're hiding the bodies. But what we don't know, so there are more people who are disappearing than were disappearing before, but we don't know whether they're ending up dead. There is every reason to believe that in a large number of cases they are ending up dead.
Burundi has been in turmoil since 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for and won a controversial third term. The report finds the youth militia, the Imbonerakure, have become more repressive and are operating with almost total impunity. It says the group harasses and intimidates the population with the approval and effective control of the ruling party and the government. Inquiry Commission President Dudu Dien says the constitutional referendum organized in May and the campaign for the upcoming elections in 2020 have triggered acts of persecution, threats, and intimidation. He says serious human rights violations always increase during election campaigns. He says it is important for the international community to be exceptionally vigilant during this period, not only in monitoring the proceedings, but in preventing abuse from occurring. The Burundian government has not responded to the report. It did not cooperate with the commission's investigation and has, in the past, disparaged its work. In June, Burundi's ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva poured scorn on the previous commission report, calling it politically biased and based on a campaign of disinformation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Rwanda, the National Electoral Commission says the final tally of votes from Monday's election gives the governing Rwanda Patriotic Front 40 seats, or 74% of the votes. The Social Democratic Party took 5 seats. The Liberal Party won 4 seats. Two smaller parties, PS Imbonerakure and the Green Party, for the first time will be sitting in parliament with 2 seats each. Now, the election was incident-free, although opposition parties complained that the ruling RPF and the government made it hard for them to campaign and attract voters. President Paul Kagame, who has been in office since 2000, has been hailed for helping his nation recover from the 1994 genocide, but human rights activists say he has been brutal towards critics and political opponents.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. This morning, Zimbabwe's newly elected lawmakers were in parliament taking their oaths of office. This comes after highly contested polls sparked protests that were violently dispersed by security forces. The opposition challenged the results, which were upheld by the Constitutional Court. Reporter Kutsayi Zvinavashi reports.
The ninth parliament meets amid high public expectations. In Zimbabwe's case, voters often expect more from lawmakers than they can realistically deliver. Amos Chibaya is a parliamentarian belonging to the opposition MDC Alliance. He explains the mandate of parliamentarians.
Members got three roles. Number one, lawmaking or legislative role. Number two, oversight role. Number three, representative role. Those are the roles and the responsibilities of a member of parliament.
Job Sikala is a lawmaker of the MDC.
Business of this parliament will be to debate the incoming budget for the year 2018 to 2019. So it will give us an opportunity to be able to raise the challenging economic issues in our country.
Sikala says the election season is over and parliamentarians across the divide should pull together to contribute towards nation building instead of political grandstanding, which he says has been the order of the day in the past. There have been fears that the ruling ZANU-PF will use its two-thirds majority to raise the presidential age limit, a move that could stop youthful MDC Alliance leaders from running in the coming elections. Victor Matemadanda is a parliamentarian and member of the ZANU-PF. He says concerns about age limits are based on rumours, not fact.
I don't think my party has spoken because my party does not speak through individuals. If you are talking about individual perceptions and individual views, those cannot be attributed to the party.
Matemadanda's views come after some party officials allegedly said ZANU-PF intends to push forward with the amendment. Sikala says the move would marginalize young people. However, Matemadanda says that the party is yet to discuss the matter. MDC legislator Joanna Mamombe agrees with Sikala. They say the best way forward is nation building, largely inspired by patriotism rather than partisanship. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Well, staying in Zimbabwe, after that country's constitutional court upheld President Emmerson Mnangagwa's July 31st election victory, the main opposition party, MDC Alliance, is now counting its losses and mulling the way forward. VOA correspondent Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
The MDC was formed from alliance splinter groups and others giving in to public calls for unity. Observers say it needs to formalize its pre-election arrangement and fully transform into a political party. One of the alliance's winning candidates, Kutsatsapulu, speaks on his party's future.
But I can confirm that certainly we are working together well as an alliance, but we are also going to be consolidating the manner in which we work, so that we work in a manner that is more efficient.
The MDC alliance has denied allegations that lack of organization was to blame for its poor performance in rural areas, which account for 60% of the Zimbabwean electorate. But it clearly needs to solidify its support and operations there ahead of the next elections in 2023. Kudu defended the rural performance and repeated the alliance's allegations of vote buying there by the ruling ZANU-PF party.
I can tell you that there are some areas, rural areas where we lost, where we were more organized than ZANU-PF, where we were more visible than ZANU-PF. I mean, you saw Bridge, the turnout, the large turnout that we had there. And certainly we had structures. And certainly we had candidates who compete. Look at the numbers, even where we lost, look at the margins. They are very narrow margins. So certainly I don't think it's true that we were disorganized to that extent.
ZANU-PF denies allegations of vote buying, preferring to say that it is delivering its mandate to uplift the lives of its constituents as a sitting government. Observers say MDC has to change its perceived platform of opposition to ousted former leader Robert Mugabe and clarify what it plans to do to help move the nation forward.
We will continue. So there must be continuous engagement. We are Democrats, and so we are pro-democracy. We are pro-public reasoning, public discourse without any sense. So that we arrive at solutions that will satisfy all the different stakeholders. But to reduce that struggle from 1999, from 2000 up to now, to Mugabe must go, is incorrect. In fact, the system that is corrupted, the system that is failing to deliver, the system that is violating human rights, which must go. Which is why there is value in Mnangagwa seeking to engage and seriously seeking to engage the opposition.
Observers also say MDC Alliance has a role to play and that the sooner they coalesce as a unit, the better for a nation which has been battered under years of mismanagement by ZANU-PF government. In his inaugural speech, President Emmerson Mnangagwa extended an invitation to MDC Alliance to work together. Former colonial master Britain is reported to be pushing for such a scenario.
Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
A continuing issue in Nigerian political campaigns is corruption. Many potential international investors give the country low marks in financial efficiency and transparency, a view that slows economic growth. Media practitioners in Nigeria have been urged to lead the fight against corruption with investigative journalism. Reporter Gift Aguiriga from Abuja, Nigeria, tells us more.
Nigerian journalists were reminded of the importance of investigative reporting and given a chance to improve their skills. The occasion was capacity building training for media practitioners. Sponsoring the effort was Action Aid Nigeria under the Strengthening Citizens' Resistance Against Prevalence of Corruption, SCRAP-C, a five-year project of the United Kingdom's anti-corruption program in Nigeria. Journalists were trained on ways to improve their reporting and storytelling skills. Classes included the rudiments of investigative journalism, like using a different identity to protect themselves in emergencies if needed. Journalists were reminded by speakers of the need to protect their sources and to avoid the brown envelope syndrome, where reporters are paid to file positive stories. The project manager, Action Aid SCRAP-C, Newton Osemaye, noted the important role played by reporters in the fight against corruption and mismanagement.
Journalists, as we all know, all over the world, they have a very vital role to play in terms of holding government accountable. They have a vital role to play in terms of reporting the ills in the society and also using their reports and stories to change narratives for better governance. So we think, in essence, that for any project that has a media component to survive in any country, you must build the capacity of journalists to help you drive that particular component of the project.
Ezin Wanwagwu is an official with the Say No campaign, a platform for Nigerians committed to fighting corruption. He says journalists can be helped in their investigations by using the Freedom of Information Act, which allows reporters access to government's files and data. Mwaku says it is the strongest instrument for citizens to monitor how public business is conducted.
We discovered that many journalists do not have basic knowledge of what the Act provides and how to use the Act to pierce into getting information from public officials. Aside that, we also have found out that many of the stories written by journalists do not come from basic principles of investigative journalism and research. And Action Aid, therefore, working with its consultants, hosted this whole week program to engage with journalists, refresh their minds on the things that they know.
A participant at the training, Chris Isiguzo, expressed his appreciation to the organizers.
We have taken off the last 1 week going through a series of training sessions with established professionals, consultants, media, and of course Freedom of Information Act, preparing us as media practitioners on our roles and ensuring that the ongoing fight against graft is taken to the next level.
Journalists from different media houses and civil society organizations attended the training. They were provided with facilitators who worked with them on a number of topics, including interviewing techniques, script writing, and the use of data and reporting. According to the 2017 Corruption Perceptions Index reported by Transparency International, Nigeria is the 148th least corrupt nation out of 175 countries. For VOA, this is Gift Aguiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
An international money transfer company has launched an online service for East Africans to send and receive money more easily. Analysts say WorldRemit will lower the cost of transferring money and boost African trade and economies. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Africa has become a thriving market for money transfer companies as its telecommunication facilities improve and its economies grow. While Remit, a British-based money transfer company, recently launched a new digital service in four East African countries. The company facilitates the transfer of at least $1.6 billion to Africa each year. The co-founder and the head of World Remit, Ismail Ahmed, tells VOA how money transfers in Africa have changed over the years.
When we launched our services, 99% of remittances were cash on both the send side and the receive side. But today, that is changing fast. And in the next few years, we think as much as 50-60% of international remittances will move from traditional physical cash, traditional remittances to digital. And that's why our services have grown very fast in the last few years.
Ahmed says that as transactions become digital, the cost of each transfer comes down and tracking money becomes easier.
It is easier for individuals and businesses to move money within the countries, but also across countries. It is easier to fight financial crime, because when transactions become digital, there is an audit trail compared to cash when there is no audit trail.
Gerishon Ikiara is an international economic affairs lecturer at the University of Nairobi. He says digital money transfers will boost trade within Africa, but notes that some countries still lack the necessary connections.
Obviously, the main challenge is the level of infrastructure, because a country without good infrastructure in terms of electricity and telecommunication infrastructure will make it a bit difficult.
The World Bank says $37.8 billion was sent to Africa through remittances in 2017. This year, the amount is expected to be $39 billion. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
And for listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News. That's coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, VOA presents a town hall special introducing members of the Mandela Washington Fellows for Young African Leaders Initiative. The 2018 Yali Fellows pledge to continue Nelson Mandela's legacy, highlighting the Yali Fellows on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.